I used to sit on the other side of the negotiating table, teaching hundreds of recruiters how to negotiate with candidates. And now I teach candidates how to do the same, how to negotiate for themselves without it being scary. It's important to remember that the negotiation doesn't begin when you get an offer. It happens long before that. It's important for interviewees to connect emotionally to the people that are interviewing them. It's not just about showcasing your skills. And that's where I think some people miss the mark. The fear holds people back and they leave thousands of dollars on the table because they don't want to put the offer at risk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Standout Job Seeker podcast presented by JobScan. I'm your host, Sydney Myers. And in this episode, I talk to John Gates. John is a 30-year recruiter, and he also trained recruiters. Now he's a career coach himself. So he's coming at it from all angles. He's done the recruiting, he's trained recruiters on how to do recruiting, and now he helps job seekers specifically with salary negotiation. And that's what we're going to talk about in this episode. Surprisingly, we haven't talked about that a lot on this podcast. And that's really one of the most terrifying parts of the job search is negotiating salary because you might be afraid that you're going to lose that offer if you quote unquote negotiate too hard. So John gives some really good advice on how to approach that, the mindset to have, maybe some of this advice that you've heard that wasn't really great advice. And coming from a recruiter, you know that he knows what he's talking about. He's going to have a lot of experience and knowledge to share with you. It's a great episode. Thank you, John, for joining the show. If you enjoy this episode, give it a thumbs up or 5 stars on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening. You can also watch the episode on YouTube on the JobScan YouTube channel, where there's lots of other videos on how to optimize your resume, how to optimize your LinkedIn profile. You can watch past webinars that we've had from other experts or other podcast episodes that we've done. There's a lot of resources there. So watch the podcast on YouTube, on the JobScan YouTube channel, and you can also see all of our other videos there as well. But wherever you're listening or watching, thank you for joining. Let's get to this interview with John Gates. Well, John, thanks for joining the show. I think there's going to be so much valuable information in here. You've been a recruiter now for 30 years, I believe. Please introduce yourself to the audience so they know kind of like who you are and the expertise that you're bringing to the table.
Well, thanks so much, Sydney. I appreciate that kind introduction. My name's John Gates. I'm the founder of Salary Coach and the Salary Coach Academy. I've been a corporate recruiter for 30 years and eventually became the head of global recruiting for multiple Fortune 500 companies. So, what I do is I help people to negotiate their pay in a safe way so that they can get through that offer process without leaving any money on the table. I'm kind of like the prosecutor who has become the defense attorney. I used to sit on the other side of the negotiating table, teaching hundreds of recruiters how to negotiate with candidates. And now I teach candidates how to do the same, how to negotiate for themselves, without it being scary. I think that's a big important thing to say.
That's actually one of the things we're going to talk about is just how scary it is. And that's the main topic of the conversation is navigating salary questions early on in the interview process, and then when it comes to negotiating salary, how to do that without risking the offer. But you mentioned something really interesting while we were talking before the interview is that part of the salary negotiation is actually laying the groundwork before you even get to that point and standing out as a candidate so that you can get the offer and get a good offer. So I want to dive into that a little bit. I mean, we're mostly going to be talking about salary negotiation, but when you were a recruiter and thinking about putting these offers together, what did candidates do that made them stand out that made you want to give them kind of a bigger offer than maybe you would someone else?
Oh, absolutely. This is a really good question, and I think an important topic too. It's important to remember that the negotiation doesn't begin when you get an offer. It happens long before that, you're talking about money at several different steps. And during the course of the interview, you're talking about value. This is really where you make the case for how valuable you are. But the question you really asked is like, okay, how do you, if you're in a crowded field of candidates, you're competing against three or four other people who are also interviewing. They also have experience and skills or they wouldn't be interviewing. How do you emerge as the top candidate, the preferred candidate? And how do you get to the point too where you are viewed as somebody who's worth more? I think that's critical. So I think it's important, and I discuss this in my book that I just came out with called Act Your Wage. It's also on the Salary Coach Academy, but I think it's important for interviewees to connect emotionally to the people that are interviewing them. It's not just about showcasing your skills. And that's where I think some people miss the mark. They think if they're just going to answer the interview questions and answer them really well and showcase how good they are at whatever skills being assessed, that that's going to get them to the winner's circle. And it might in some cases, but I've spent a whole career behind the scenes in interview debrief meetings. I call those meetings. Managers interviewed three or four people. Now he or she is trying to decide who they want to make the offer to. So as a recruiter, and I teach recruiters how to do this, call a meeting, get everybody around a table. Let's talk about the pros and cons of each one and see what they say. And during the course of many, many years of those meetings, I've seen a lot of things kind of come to the forefront as decision difference makers, so to speak. And so every person that's interviewing you has an agenda. They have stakes involved in it. Like they're a stakeholder, right? The hiring manager has some stakes. The peer interviewer has some stakes. The customer who's interviewing you has some stakes. It's really important that you as a candidate identify what those stakes are. And research on how the human brain works and all that has been going on for a long time. It has been proven that people will run away from fear a lot faster than they will run toward something that they want. And so one powerful technique you can use is you can try to understand what the worst, deepest fears are that interviewer has related to this position. In other words, if you were interviewing me, Sydney, at the end of every interview, there's usually a chance for candidates to ask questions. And really often they waste this time on things that they're just curious about instead of selling themselves. So this is how you connect to the emotions of the person that's interviewing you. You could ask a question like, hey, Sydney, we've been talking about this position for quite some time now. What's the worst thing that could happen to you if you pick the wrong person for this job? And you just sit there quietly and you let them process that question and then answer it. And immediately they already know what the answer is. They may not want to tell you, but the fear of what's the worst thing that could happen pops up in their head. And usually that's going to lead you down to discussion, right? What you're trying to understand is what their personal stakes are in this position. And if they make a hiring mistake here, what's the worst thing that could happen to them? And for a hiring manager, it might be something, they're never going to say this, but maybe I won't get my bonus at the end of the year. Or I'm on a little bit of thin ice with my boss. I'm hiring for this position because there's something failing in the team. I need to fix that. And if I don't, my reputation's going to be damaged somehow. And everybody knows once you make a hiring decision, it can be difficult to unwind from it if you make a mistake. So making a hiring mistake is a big fear that people have. How that mistake lives out in the lives of the people in the team is really important to understand. So it might be, if I hire the wrong person here, then that means that this project's not going to be delivered on time, or this customer relationship will continue to suffer. Mm-hmm. And when you start to understand the fears, next thing you can say is something along the lines of, well, Sydney, if you hire me instead of somebody else, you don't have to worry about that because, and then you bring in your experience. You say, because I've managed projects like that. In fact, in my last job, I had one that was kind of like that. And I worked Friday, Saturday, Sunday to make sure that it was going to be delivered on time. I identified the places where it was going to come off the rails and miss the mark, and I fixed those, and this is how I did that. And so what you're really trying to do here is reassure them that their worst nightmares go away if they hire you instead of somebody else. If nobody else is doing that, then they have to guess whether or not their worst fears will be taken on the table if they hire you. But this is how you connect it to the negotiating process and how you improve your value along the way. So if you can get down to the place where you're identifying their worst fear, or the opposite of that is their biggest ambition if they don't really have any fears, you can start asking them, well, okay, if that bad thing happened, how much would it cost the company? What is that problem worth from a money standpoint? So if that project isn't delivered on time, what happens to the financials of the team or the company or something like that? Is that a $50,000 problem or is that a $5 million problem? Mm-hmm. If that's a $5 million problem that you can solve and you've just shown them how you can solve it, now you're worth more money. So these are some little tips and techniques that I work with my clients to build and to develop. But every person that's interviewing you has their own worries, their own fears, even if it's a peer. You interview with peers sometimes. You're going to interview with people on the team, people that you would interact with regularly. What their worst fear is going to be different from the hiring manager's worst fear. You know, they might feel like let's say I was interviewing for a head of talent acquisition role and I was interviewing with the head of compensation and benefits as a peer. The worst thing that could happen is that, recruiters would go off the reservation and start making offers that weren't consistent with the comp philosophy of the company. And now the head of comp and benefits has to go in and spend a lot of time cleaning up the mess that the recruiters made. So now if that's the worst fear, and I can say, well, you don't have to worry about that if you hire me, because I'm very careful about training my recruiters not to do that. I understand how much that is. In fact, the last company I was at, I had to train the whole recruiting staff to make sure that didn't happen. We're all on the same team. You know, so, and I can transition into if that does happen to you, like, what does that do to your team? Does it drive turnover in your team? Is there a cost associated with that? Maybe it's an opportunity cost because you're chasing all that damage that the recruiting team has done. Maybe now you don't have time to go optimize the benefits plan for the company, which is going to save lots of money. So you start positioning yourself as the person that they want to work with. And why do they want you more than somebody else? Because you care about what they care about. It's all about, you can deliver results. Yeah, that's fine. Everybody wants results. But do you care about what they are caring about? This is really important to establish that emotional connection.
Yeah. And that makes so much sense, because it's the person who is making an offer. So you want to become valuable to that person. And so, of course, they're going to have in mind business goals and what matters to the business, but they're also going to have in mind their goals or their concerns. And so whenever they're thinking about who to hire, how much to offer, if you can solve like their personal individual problem or address that fear, like that makes sense. They're the ones making the offer. So you want to show your value in what matters to them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what separates you, because during the interview, you're probably going to be answering all these skill-based questions. Mm-hmm. Can you solve this kind of problem? Do you know this software? how good are you at dealing with these kind of issues when they pop up? They're skirting the issue with those questions.
That's
they're,
true.
They're trying to build a like they built in their mind a theory that if somebody's going to answer these questions well along the way that I want, it means that they're a safe hiring decision.
Yeah, that is so true. Yeah.
So you can hit it directly just by asking that one question or something similar to it, like when it comes to this job, what keeps you awake at night? What stresses you out? But I think the most direct way is what happens to you if you make the wrong choice here and hire the wrong person.
Yeah, that's so true. When I'm putting together the list of questions that I want to ask the candidate, or whenever I'm probing them, really it's because this is what I need done. And I think that for someone who is able to do that, these are probably like this is what they would say, or like this is the knowledge they would have, or whatever. So I'm really, it's kind of like you're kind of like guessing at this profile of the person, when really all we want to ask is just like, honestly, tell me the truth. Can you do this job the way that I need it to be done? But you know, you kind of have to probe a little bit. But for the candidate to come back and ask that question, I think makes a lot of sense. So that kind of leads me to one of my questions, you know, related to, you know, getting directly into salary conversations, is that you're usually asked pretty early on in the interview process what your salary expectations are. And at that point, you haven't really talked to a lot of people. Maybe that's on the telephone screening call with the recruiter. So how could a person answer that? I'll start there. My follow-up is like, what are some mistakes that a person makes that make you just like instantly scratch them off the list? But how do they handle that, knowing that I want to make an emotional connection before I really get to that point?
Okay, I'll try to save some gas for the last half of that question.
Okay.
A really, really good one. But I think, how do people get through it? I think it is important to understand what the recruiter or the person who's calling you is trying to achieve. And if you can start to understand this, it's helpful. And what I'm going to tell you on how to get through this particular early money discussion, it's going to stick a little bit if you understand the recruiter's mentality and the HR person's sort of workflow. Because usually it's somebody from HR who's doing that. It might be a corporate recruiter. It might even be a third-party recruiter working for an agency. You've applied or you've sent a resume, and now they're responding to you. And they're always going to ask you, so, Sydney, what's your salary requirement? How much money do you need to make? And here's why they do that. Their primary objective is to answer three questions. And this is when I train recruiters, I teach them that this is what a good phone screen should include. Are you qualified? So do you have the skills and qualifications that are needed for the job? Are you interested? Because you might not be interested at all. And so you have to assess the person's interest. You're going to tell them about the job. You're going to ask them, does this sound interesting to you? And it might be, well, that sounds boring as heck. No. Or the job's in Chicago and I'm in Dallas. No. You know, there's a lot of ways somebody might become uninterested. And the last is affordable. Are you affordable? And the big question they're trying to answer in their own mind is, if I'm talking to you, Sydney, I'm thinking, can I get Sydney? Can I get her financially? Is she obtainable? So they ask that question. And when the question comes at you, you feel like you need to give them a number. And giving them a number is one of the mistakes. So the reason why they're pressing you for a number is because they already have a range in their mind about what's possible, what's gettable. It's going to be between here and here. This is the realistic range. And if you give them a number, now they've got a point on a number line that's either in that or it's out of that. It's really simple for the recruiter. you're in or you're out, maybe makes them uncomfortable. And this is why a recruiter who submits a bunch of candidates, this is true if you're an agency recruiter or an internal corporate recruiter, if you submit a bunch of candidates and then you start scheduling interviews and you tie up a short staffed interview team too many times with candidates that you can't close at the end because of money, that's a very embarrassing thing for a recruiter. So you have to, at this point, reassure them that you are gettable. But the right way to answer this question is with a range, not with a number.
Okay.
We already talked some about how in the interview process, you're going to try to improve your value to the manager by saying you can solve problems that have a financial impact. If you give them a number at this point, they'll think, well, I can get you at that number. If we're talking and I say my salary requirement is 185, I just gave you a number. Now you as the recruiter, you're thinking, well, if I make him an offer at 185, it's a done deal and we're good to go. Well, what if you were willing or able even to do 225? I just left a lot of money on the table by committing to a number before I built my value in the interview process. Now, what if I say 185 and that's above your range? You know, the range in your mind is 140 to 160 and you're coming in at 185. You just, you probably just got screened out.
Yeah.
At this point, because now they perceive you as not gettable. But if you say, well, I'm looking at something in the, you know, 155 to 225 range, now you're gettable because you're still within that, you're below that 160 cap that's in their head. But believe me, even though that number at 160 is the top in the recruiter's mind, there might be a whole nother grade available in the hiring manager's mind if you impress in the interview process.
Yeah.
Seems to happen all the time. And you know, another mistake people make early on here is that they don't shift into a total compensation language early enough. They keep it down at the salary. The question will come at you, what's your salary requirement? And so you want to answer it with a salary number. Instead, you should shift into total compensation language. And so when you're giving them your range, you can say, I don't know, you can start off by just asking what's the budget for the position before you answer the question. And when they give you an answer, you can say, is that salary only or does that include incentives?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So you want to try to understand how their pay package is structured. And a recruiter is going to want to answer that question because it's a selling point. So instead of saying my salary requirement is 155 to low twos, you can shift into something that says, I'm talking to a number of companies and every company has their own, you know, pay mix, but the total pay package, including incentives that I'm discussing with other companies, is between A and B.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so then as long as there's overlap between your range and theirs, they're likely to move you forward because they know that they can get you that point. So that's just a little bit of early positioning advice and how not to paint yourself into a corner.
Yeah.
Real early in the process. Another big mistake that some people make here, they do it on the application and they also do it in the phone screen, is they'll use vague language like negotiable or open or we'll discuss or something in the application. And as a recruiter, when I'm reviewing applications, if there are 20 people that qualify that I might call, I can only have time to call five or six of them. And I don't want to commit my very, very busy schedule to talk to somebody that in the first 5 minutes of that call, I might realize that they're out of bounds on the pay because they gave me nothing to go on in the application, right? So that's an easy way to get screened out, actually, if there are a lot of, if there's a lot of competition for the job that you're applying to. This, people use the same tactic sometimes in a phone interview. And I see this advice in a lot of places. When you get that question, you should defer it until after the interview. You should say, well, it's pretty early, I'm just not sure. And I think you should give them something to go on because, like I said before, the risk of embarrassment to the recruiter is very, very high. If you do this more than a few times, the hiring departments, that your people who are your customers, are going to start to feel like you're not competent. You that's why recruiters will press you and push you for numbers. And if you insist on being vague and not answering the question, the risk in their mind just goes way up.
Yeah.
And unless you're like a unicorn, one in a million, they've been searching for 6 months and you're the only person they've found, like that's the fast track usually to getting screened out. No one else, the hiring manager, the interview team, nobody else has fallen in love with you yet because they haven't even met you. So this is a point of high risk where you can get bounced out of the process real quick if you if you mishandle this with a recruiter. They can flush you down without a second thought, and no one will ever know anything different unless somebody internally referred you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I've actually made that mistake before when asked what were my salary requirements, and I gave just one specific number, but it was in the first phone interview. And then as I did more interviews about the job and got to know what all was involved, I realized that I actually wanted to ask for more because there was a lot more involved than I thought. Thankfully, the company ended up offering me more, so it kind of worked out. But it's, yeah, I can see how having the range would be better. And also giving a number in general, because, yeah, the recruiter, like, time is everything to them. So they want people that they know will finish the process and probably that they can hire.
Yeah. Most job seekers don't realize that the average corporate recruiter is juggling 30 or more open positions. Yeah. And if you figure they've got 40 hours a week, maybe 50 hours a week, plus a bunch of other meetings and things like that, maybe they've got less than an hour a week to work on each one of these things.
Yeah.
That's how precious their time is and how pressed for time they are.
Yeah. So this kind of goes into one of my other questions about how risky salary negotiation is. Say, like, we're at the point where it's at the end and we're like really negotiating the final salary. It feels risky and it feels like you're just afraid to lose that offer. Is it actually that risky? Like, should we be that afraid? What's your perspective on being on that side of the recruiter?
Yeah, I've seen offers fall apart before at the finish line. And when you are a candidate, that's the most terrifying idea ever.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to, you've worked so hard to get to this point where you have an offer. You don't want to push it. So those fears come from a belief about what negotiation is, I think. And if I can dispel some of these myths, negotiation should not be a game of chicken. And I think that's what a lot of people think it is. Like, you see a lot of memes out there that say, person who talks about salary first loses, and that it's like a gunfight or a duel to the death or something like this. High stakes, high risk. Absolutely, it's high stakes, but does not have to be high risk. So the way to think about pay negotiations, really, it should be a high collaboration exercise. It should be a place where you can receive an offer, then take a couple of days and ask questions about the offer. Find out what is possible. And if you approach things in the right way, in the right tempo, kind of using the right words, you can do this in your own natural personality. You do not have to become someone that you're not. This is another thing that holds people back, because not only do they believe that it's a game of chicken, high risk, win, lose, coin flip. They also believe that in order to negotiate, you have to be aggressive, or you have to be comfortable with high confrontation, that it's confrontational, that you have to be willing to argue or stand up for your worth. You hear this a lot in online. You see memes about it, like, stand up for your worth. And to most people internally in your guts, you feel like, well, okay, I'm going to have to compete. I'm going to have to do this. So when I coach people, I teach you to analyze the offer, look for gaps, ask questions, get the answers, ask about what's possible so that you know what they're likely to accept when you put a counter offer on the table. They may even offer certain things. I just had an offer happen this week. I know it was late last week with a client of mine. He got an offer, and conspicuously absent from the offer was any kind of long-term incentive or signing bonus. And a lot of companies, you know, I told them, they sent you signals that the salary was near the top of their range. So they're sending you signals that they don't have a lot of room on the salary. But the offer doesn't include a signing bonus. And if I'm putting myself in their shoes, I'm thinking they already have one ready to go. They're holding it back as a closer. They want to know what it's going to take, and then they're going to use that to close the deal. So I'm guiding him through that process right now. But this issue happens to everybody, Sydney. I'm really glad you asked about this. The fear holds people back, and they leave thousands of dollars on the table because they don't want to put the offer at risk. And I'm telling you, you don't have to put it at risk. There are proven ways that you can get through this without putting your offer at risk, or at least keeping the risk to almost zero. And I had a C-suite executive that I was working with a couple months back, chief operating officer, and he was unemployed and terrified that his severance was going to run out. And, you know, he's got C-suite executives, they've got a lifestyle that burns a lot of cash. And he didn't want to be in a position where now he can't write a tuition check for his college son. So he gets an offer, and he told me, John, I think it's good enough. When, as soon as you say that to yourself, you get an offer, I think it's good enough, you're probably about to leave a lot of money on the table. You're letting the fear of loss and this perception that it's a high risk situation to discuss this and see what's possible rule you. And since he was a C-suite guy, we were negotiating straight with a CEO. And so I was guiding him through the process of asking the right questions, discovering what's possible, what's flexible. Well, through that process, we found out that he'd already, of course, informed the board of directors that he'd found his candidate.
Oh, that was a mistake.
You think the CEO wants this guy to wiggle off the hook?
Yeah.
Absolutely no. Absolutely not. Thing to remember is, if somebody offers you a job, they want you to say yes. They really do. The last thing they want is to get a no from you and have to go start the whole thing over again, or go to their number two candidate who wasn't as good as you. They want you to say yes. So you're just going to help them define the path to yes. Real easy. So went through this process with him, and we found out just about every front in this offer was wiggleable. We got them to move the bonus structure up. We got them to waive the proration on the first bonus. And you know, if you're going to a company in the middle of the year, usually your first bonus is going to be cut in half because you're starting in the middle of the year. Did you know that you can ask them to waive the proration on that?
Wow,
You got to
nice.
give them a reason to say yes to it, but in this case, we had a pretty good reason. So we asked them if that was possible, and the answer was yes. And that alone was worth $95,000 in his offer package.
Gosh. Wow.
When we were all done, they moved the salary up a bit. They moved the bonus structure up a bit. They waived the proration. They gave him a six-figure signing bonus. They added $150,000 to his initial equity stake. We ended up moving that offer up $613,000.
Wow.
It was crazy. It was the actual high watermark of my coaching
Yeah.
career. It happened just a couple of months ago. I can't help everybody to get that much, but it just goes to show you how much money the average person's leaving on the table. It's five figures in most cases.
Yeah. I want to negotiate for a $100,000 bonus. That sounds like fun.
Well, believe it or not, that happens all the time. Like,
Yeah.
when you get into, like, say, the director level and above, very often people are leaving unvested stock on the table. They're midway through the year and they've got half their bonus earned. They're walking away from that. You just have to give them a reason to give it to you and
Yeah.
a justification of some kind. And that's what I help my clients to craft.
Yeah. And I think I like that point about how it doesn't have to be high, like it is high stakes, but you don't have to be afraid of it. Like, because it doesn't have to be a game. It doesn't have to be a battle. A battle is high stakes because it's generally life and death, but a collaboration like you were talking about is not high stakes. A conversation is not high stakes. So if you kind of like, and I think a lot of people do think that I think that if I'm going into salary negotiations, it's like I got to have my tough face on and I got to be ready for this. But if you approach it as just like a conversation, like, I know you want to hire me. I want to work here. How can we connect the dots and make that happen? I
I
think
have
that
these
kind of takes some of the
obstacles.
pressure off.
Can I have these obstacles. Can you help me to resolve these obstacles? And you just give them some ideas on how they can push those obstacles out of the way. You find out what's possible. Now, what you might find out is the offer you already have is already maximized. That happens sometimes. And if that's the case, then you did a good job of building your value up through the process and you've already maximized the offer. Now you've got a decision to make. Is that acceptable or not? If it's already maximized, you are probably putting the offer at risk by asking for more. But even in those cases, if it's already maximized, you might still be able to squeeze an extra $4,000 or $5,000 out of this because, like I said, it's cheaper to appease you than to go back to the beginning. They don't want to do that.
You know, you mentioned in there a lot of the advice sometimes is to like to know your worth, go into the conversation with that mindset. But you mentioned how that's like really not a good idea. Could you elaborate on that of like why the
Sure.
I know what I'm worth is not really the best way to approach salary negotiation?
Yeah, it's the way I see this being pitched out there, and it makes a lot of sense. Like, there are a lot of people that want to seem like they're standing up for the rights of candidates across the world, and they get all mad about things, and they say, well, here's how you should do it. You should go out and do your research, figure out what the market is for your skills, and go and then demand that your boss or your future boss acknowledge that. And it's usually a mistake because I've been the recipient of that strategy many, many times. It's too easy for me to debunk it. And keep in mind, if you are a candidate going through a hiring process, you might change jobs 5, 8, 10 times in your lifetime. So you're having these financial conversations that often. If you're talking to somebody like me, I might be doing 5, 8, or 10 offers every week. So you're at a bit of a disadvantage already. So you need to level the playing field a little bit. But when somebody comes at me with their research, I can say, well, I appreciate all the research that you've done. That's really, really good that you spent all that much time on it. But I want you to know that we also benchmark against specific companies. And you're giving me a salary survey, and I don't know who has responded to that survey. I don't even know if they think a senior engineer is the same as what we think a senior engineer is.
Okay.
So we've benchmarked against the companies that we compete directly with for talent, and we're very comfortable that our range is right where we want it to be. And that's all I have to say to take the wind out of their claim that they're worth that much, right?
Yeah.
And it can be, if you're following that process and that happens to you, you just get immediately deflated. So I'm gonna put some meat on the bone for the people listening to this. I'm going to tell you exactly how to navigate that.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Yes.
Share a secret. So instead of pulling data from Glassdoor or from job postings that might advertise salary, or from salary.com or payscale.com or any of these sites, instead of pulling that, what you want to do, I mean, that might be good to start with, right? You want to have a few conversations with other companies. But instead, you can say, well, I'm in an active job search right now. I'm in discussion with multiple companies. And the pay range that I'm discussing with them, total pay, including incentives, is between X and Y. So that's where I see my market value right now. And guess what? A guy like me cannot argue with what other companies are telling you.
Yeah.
They can't. I mean, they can say, well, this is how we've benchmarked our job, and they can get back down into that. But they can't just dismiss what other companies are offering you. And this is very powerful for a couple of reasons. First of all, if there are other companies that you're talking to, it means that they're going to have to compete for you. And you've already told them what the competition field looks like. Mm-hmm. In order to get in the game and to come after you, they're going to have to put something together that is in this range.
Mm-hmm.
They can't do that, then they'll tell you right away. They'll say, well, our range is a lot lower than that. And then you've got a decision to make. Are you going to reassure them that you're still gettable in that lower range for some reason? Or are you going to ask them kind of the Hail Mary question, which might be something like, well, if I really knocked it out of the park in the interview process, is it possible we could look at a range above, a level above this? Granted, I expected I would have to be an absolutely perfect candidate, but if I was, could something like that be possible? And so if their pay range is just like legit two rungs below what you would even consider, I would either bow out or offer that as an option to see if you can get. And you know, if you go through this, you've communicated your range, and they schedule an interview anyway, it's not because they think they can get you at that lower range. It means that they think your range is possible.
Okay.
In other words, that you've answered the question in their head, can we get you? They just don't want to advertise that the range above is available.
Yeah.
Because recruiters want to set your expectations low and then overachieve. If they set them too high and then underwhelm you with the offer, that's not a good outcome for recruiters. They get a lot of offers declined that way.
Yeah. Okay. So then it's better if you're going to come in with the, I know my worth, like that's okay. Just make sure you're basing it on data that the company will respect, which would be offers that you've actually gotten, not from like a site. Or maybe like just don't even say where you got it. Just say, this is my range, kind of like what you started in this conversation. Like, this is my range. You know, that's what I'm looking at. That's what I would like to take.
Yeah, there's another concept at play here, and that is competition is good for you in this process. Mm-hmm. It's leverage that you should build up.
Yeah, yeah.
So as you're having phone screens with companies and you're asking them what their budget is for the job, like you start to piece together the data points about what the market is for you.
Okay.
So that's how you establish what you're worth. Do not rely on salary surveys because they're just too easy. Now, before you've had any of those conversations, you're probably going to have to bring that in until you've had a few of these. But there's a concept I illustrate in my book called mimetic desire. Mm-hmm. And this is psychological sorcery that any candidate can use. It's a magic trick, but the illustration I have in my book is a room full of toys and two toddlers. If you've got 100 toys in a room, you have two toddlers in that room. One of them picks up one toy. Which toy does the other toddler always want 100% of the time?
The same toy.
Yeah. It's the toy that the first toddler picked up. Now, if you're going through a process and you start to work in this into the conversation, that you're in discussions with other companies, this is, you know, you're the toy that somebody else wants now.
Yeah.
But if you come across as you have no options, you're desperate, you mm-hmm. are, you know, it's quite easy to schedule with you, things like that. Nobody's interested in you. If you're desperate, people start to wonder what's wrong with you.
Hmm.
It holds you back. Like, I've seen this trend on LinkedIn lately where people are taking the green open to work banner down mm-hmm. and they're replacing it with a pink one that says #desperate.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. And they're thinking that this is going to break the job search loose when it actually mm-hmm. reduces your value in the minds of people who see that.
Yeah.
If you're desperate, why is that? Why doesn't anybody want you? There must be some flaw here mm-hmm. that I'm not seeing. And it doesn't just depress your value and invite a lowball offer. It actually discourages from people from calling you.
Yeah.
I think it's the wrong move. It's just like human psychology works against you. You need to mm-hmm. create a strategy that builds you up, builds your value, builds your desirability. If this works in the dating world and in all kinds of places, mm-hmm. right? So it's true in job search too. If there are lots of people that want you, it's evidence that you are really strong talent.
Mm-hmm.
Because strong talent always has lots of suitors, right? That's what people believe.
Mm-hmm.
If you were God's gift to your profession, why wouldn't there be a line of people wanting to hire you? Even if that's not true, you have to present yourself as if it is.
Yeah. I think my main takeaway from this conversation is that salary negotiations actually start way before the actual salary conversation. It's something that you have to have in mind along the way. And like, kind of some of it is like, well, yeah, I'm always trying to build my value. But like the first point of like building your value in the eyes of the person that's going to be making you the offer and making it that value personal to them. Like, that's a big part of it. And then kind of this of like dropping hints of like having other offers or talking to other companies. It's like laying the groundwork for the salary negotiation.
Yeah, it's very interesting how it all works, because I have some clients come to me at the finish line when they have an offer that they don't like, or they just want to know if it can be improved. And that's the first contact I have, is they'll reach mm-hmm. out to me and they'll say, John, help me. I've got this offer. I really need this job. I'm probably going to say yes because I'm desperate. And I need to feed my family. But what can you do to help me make this better?
Mm-hmm.
I will start talking to them about all the things that led up to this offer, and I'll discover that they stepped on a lot of landmines that were perfectly avoidable before they got that offer. It's super important for people to remember, too, that there's an offer approval process before you ever get an offer. The person who's hiring you is going to put some numbers in front of approvers. This might be their boss. It might be the compensation team. It might be a committee of people that review all job offers. It might be the CEO of the company. You just don't know, right? Mm-hmm. But some people other than the boss probably are approving the offer. And so that manager is going to take everything you said up until now and how you showed up in the interview and say, this is what I think Sydney's worth. I want to make an offer to Sydney for this. And if the offer goes out and it's way off, if it's 30% low and you perceive it as a low ball, can that hiring manager politically go back up through those approvers and say, Sydney's actually worth more than that? Without looking very foolish.
Yeah.
You can go for a little bit more, but to go for 30% more is really hard to do. And that's why it's hard to undo those big mistakes. I can make my clients a whole lot more money if they start working with me earlier in the process.
Yeah, interesting. Well, thank you for sharing your insights. In addition to being a recruiter, you also coach people on salary negotiation. So where can people find you to get more insights? I know you also have a book that you recently published.
Yep. Just published Act Your Wage, which is the best book on the topic, I think. It gives the subtitles what to say and how to say it to get the best possible salary package. And it really is. It's about half of what I would tell my coaching clients. So I've got a site called the Salary Coach Academy that has video recorded lessons of me teaching on what to say at every single step of the process. So that's pretty good. But for people who are particularly anxious about this, I also coach people one-on-one.
Yeah.
And anybody that would like to inquire about that or just has a question can reach out to me at john@salary.coach. That's probably the most direct way to get a hold of me. In fact, if anybody listening to this wants to hit me up, I will send you chapter 5 of my book for free. You just have to email me.
Awesome. I'll put the email address in the show notes too, as well as your LinkedIn profile so you can connect with you there. Sure. Thank you. Thank you again for your time. This was great. Thank you.
Appreciate you, Sydney. Thank you. And what you're doing here is really important for job seekers. So
awesome.
Thanks for
Thank
doing
you.
The podcast.
Thank you.